Gold bits, podcast. Black Heart Gold Podcast, episode 53, I think
it's episode 78.
Wow, we've gotten a long way this year. Yeah. Pat Vent, Adam Jacoby, joining you on a lovely, miserable, cold, dreary afternoon in Des Moines, Iowa. Adam, how you doing?
I would tell you I'm doing great. I really don't have anything to complain about, but you're not kidding. It's really a miserable afternoon. I was outside taking care of the dog for a little bit, and it spat rain for like 2 minutes, maybe 3 minutes, and it wasn't like hard rain or anything like that. It was just enough to get your face wet and get the wind going and remind you that it really sucks this time of year.
Your dog spat rain?
No, that's not the it. The weather. Hey.
I'm on dangling modifier patrol. Sorry.
I'll modify your dangler.
Okay.
Let's not keep that in.
All right. Hey, we're joined by Morehouse, the king of all media, ruler of, well, all of Eastern Iowa, and beat reporter for the Cedar Rapids Gazette, or just the Gazette, which is based in Cedar Rapids now. Mark, what's going on?
Hey, how's it going? You're right. It's sucky outside. It's not cool, especially when you have a big white dog that sheds.
Yes. Yes, indeed. And she stinks when it gets wet out.
Mm-hmm.
So, Mark, you spent the afternoon at the Hayden Fry Football Complex for the spring press conference and the fallout of rhabdomyolysis gate, which is now being just called Gate on Twitter. Before we get into depth charting and injuries and things like that, obviously you've seen the report. We've discussed it a little bit. It seems to be just a kind of a confirmation of what we already knew. Was there anything really new that came out of the report today, in your estimation?
No, nothing. I mean, it was the same stuff. And it was. I tweeted it on February 2nd, and people yelled at me on Twitter about, what if this was, you know, working out hard and a freak thing? Oh, no, it could not be that. There must be something sinister. Well, there wasn't. It's a hard workout. I think maybe the one thing that might have triggered it was 3.5 weeks on the couch eating potato chips over Christmas break.
Yeah.
That could have been it. Jumping in both feet, doing the crazy workout where people do squats until they drop. And it sounds like this is a little bit of a modification. Nothing from a previous work. I want to say it was a 2007 one when they really stunk and they wanted to really see who was there. That sounded like it was full body weight. And I thought not a lot of people saw this because it was sort of just kind of run over because it was NFL combine coverage and that sort of yada, yada, yada type stuff. But, I talked to Julian Vanderbilt there about that, about the workout and the wrapped up thing. And he brought up, it's a bonding thing. It's he got out 12 more reps than he thought he would because his teammates were there yelling and cheering for him. And there's a bonding part of it. And I don't know, this workout is going away. That's probably that was confirmed. That's something we did not know. What else? Other than that, there'd be more oversight. I'm not sure how much more there can be. I know that they're super serious over there about making sure everyone's covered medically. I mean, they spend millions of dollars a year on the medical part of things. So really, other than that, I think the next potential turn for this story would be dissatisfied player Vince. And that could happen. I mean, if they're... transfers don't usually happen until May, June. that's still out there. That's a total hypothetical, but it's a possibility.
Mm-hmm. Now, don't you think, and maybe this is just me misunderstanding the situation, but don't you think that the problem was never a lack of oversight in the first place? Because these guys didn't have the symptoms becoming readily apparent for rhabdo until days afterward. So what exactly were the strength and conditioning coaches supposed to see the day of the workout and immediately afterwards that they didn't?
Yeah, I think that fact, I think the whole awareness of rhabdo, I think that was lacking. I mean, it felt like it was because, boom, all of a sudden there it was. But, you know, there's it didn't get that granular, this report, so we don't know who knew what when exactly. But you're right. I mean, how much more oversight can there be? I mean, exactly. I mean, water is abundant. They're all the strength coaches are there. The last thing they want to do is hurt one of these kids. The clinic is right there. There's medical people around for all these things because of the never know factor. I mean, that came home for, you know, the nation with that poor kid up in Michigan. Totally different circumstance, but I think that specter is there for just about any time you gather athletes together and put them through work.
Now, Mark, I thought it was interesting you brought up the fact that the health care, the medical care is right there. I mean, literally across the street from where these guys are working out. I thought it was interesting today that Ferentz actually addressed the national media uproar. It's not usually his MO to get into a swearing contest with Greg Boyle and those guys, but... was there a reason why, in your estimation, he felt he had to do that this time around?
I think everybody has their breaking point on that kind of thing. Some coaches, take it to the grave. And Ferentz, you're right, Pat, but mostly that's what Ferentz does. I mean, he swallows it. And the aggression comes out somewhere. I think it's probably Ben and Jerry's, but I don't know. today, I think, Maybe some of that stuff, you know, broke his pinata a little bit too. You know, I think that he obviously wanted to say something. And to me, and I don't have him committed to memory, but I did read all those pieces. And to me, I think Greg Doyle's piece was probably it was just phony, but I don't think it really hammered Ferentz like say. The Pat Forty report, which, you know, in the world of instantaneous opinion, and we're talking instantaneous opinion here, and to Forty's credit, he did some reporting on it. He talked to a handful, one or two parents who were angry and emotional, that side of the story. He got a full dose of that side of the story. As far as I know, I'm totally Monday morning quarterbacking this, and I'm going to lose my union card for this. but he did that. And then, he put an opinion in, and to me, that is being—it's dangerous because I read that and I thought, "Whoa!" I believe that was the one that had the term "barbaric," and I might be wrong. And that might have been Doyle actually, but he basically at the end of his column before he said, "You know, Ferentz, this shows that Ferentz doesn't how much he cares about the players," which, having been around this thing for however long I've been, 13 years, there's nobody who cares more about players. I mean, you guys see, every time Kylie Rowe brings it up, and she is very, very good at it now, what about your players? And then she kind of, like, smiles, like, come on, squeeze out a few tears, I know they're coming. And they invariably do. He cares about players. I mean, this is not, there's no punitive nature to this. He cares about players. And then the other one, Dennis Dodd, I think right now he is at the point where he's just trying to rattle Iowa's fans' cage because he knows they'll pay attention, they'll give him feedback, and I think he's had enough of them. And he just wants to rattle their case. The mass transfer thing, he might know something I don't know. I don't know if there's mass transfers coming. I don't get that sense there is. There was certainly no sense of that today when I asked Coach Ferentz if, do you feel like you're gonna lose anybody? And he didn't say no, but he didn't say, everybody's going to be leaving. But he did say that, you know, he did not anticipate it. So there's that. And then in May, you know, I think May, June, we'll find out for sure. But, you know, the whole man's transfer thing was, I think that was just to rattle out of Sam's cage. And you guys have called writers out. You guys have called writers out this in the past. I mean, intellectual dishonesty. Like, I think Tom Deanhart wrote a couple of years ago as, you know, Coach Parents, best coach in the Big Ten, blah, blah, blah. I think that was just, I don't want to say a cheap shot, but it was just something to rattle Iowa fans' cages. And to me, was it worth it? I don't think so. But, you know, that's my opinion on those. Like I said, the Union card is now being torn up by, well, it's Greg Doyle. Oh my God, what are you doing in here?
the shadowy cabal of journalists that control everything that actually ends up in print.
It's going to be like the adjustment, Roger Sterling in that movie.
Oh,
and
the Adjustment Bureau.
Yeah, that's it. They're going to come in and adjust me.
Go on.
I'd probably come off homery, you know, on this, but if you guys follow my work, you know I'm not that by any stretch. And it's just the whole parents doesn't care about players, that whole vibe, it's just not true. It's just not true.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Well, I remember your piece talking about how you knew him personally and you'd eaten dinner at his house. Oh, wait, that wasn't you. Sorry, Mark. anyway, let's get off that topic. Let's get into spring football.
Yes.
Go ahead, Adam.
I was going to say, what are your impressions of the two deeps? And specifically, what do you make of the fact that some guys are conspicuously absent and some people are conspicuously there? And specifically, I mean, Marvin McNutt is on the two deeps and Jordan Bernstein is not. What the hell? Why?
Yeah, I saw it too and it jumped out to me. And today is the first day I ever used the iPhone to post a blog while the press conference was going on. So the story changes a little bit after I post it, so I had to go back and repost. So I don't really know what the worth is there. Anyway, I did note that right away. But and he was Coach Harris asked about Bernstein, Jordan Bernstein, and he said that they really just want to see a good, healthy stretch for him. I assume he's around. There was no indication today that he's gone anywhere, and it sounds like he's very much in the plans for safety. I think right now, I'm not sure. You know, I think he was probably one of the worst case of the Rabdo guys.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wonder about that. I wonder if there's some ill will there. I wonder if, you know, I know he was one of the parents, that was, his family was one of the parent, groups that was very, very angry when this went down. So I don't know about that. I think it doesn't mean anything, but that's just what I think and what I sense. And, but I'm not sure. Like I said, mass transfers could still happen. I think that sort of threat or whatever, however you want to term it, passes in June. That was interesting. That one caught my eye for sure. I noted that in that post.
Yeah, because Shane DeBona was one of the guys that was also suggested that he was one of the Rabdo 13, right?
He was. I mean,
okay.
But
he's.
I know. By the way, I know my scoreboard is up to 8. I know of 8.
Okay. Well, we won't get into all of that. But you know, he's on there. So, do you think it's just a matter of severity and a longer road to recovery for Bernstein than DeBona, or do you think that there's something worse afoot for Bernstein as far as his future with the program?
Yeah, I don't know. I hate to look at a spring too deep and try to read too much in it, but that's a fair question, and it was asked today. I mean, you know, I think it might have been exactly that, where is Bernstein, but fair question. And also with DeBona, he had the Rabdo. He also had shoulder surgery, I want to say in early, mid-February. He's on there. Marvin had the thumb and the shoulder done. He's on there. Mm-hmm. But Steve Bigak is listed at, you know, I think he'd probably be a strong candidate for the other tackle spot that Thomas Nardo is listed at. Thomas Nardo, it sure looked like he was, I don't know this for a fact, but in the university emails, it sure looked like he was one of the Rabdo guys. His dad sent emails that got in there saying that he would be missing class for a week.
Oh, so, that's right. Yep. Yep. So that's
he was number seven in my mind. So he's listed as number one tackle, and Steve Bigek, who also had shoulder surgery, he's listed as number two defensive tackle. So, you know, you can parse this down. Tanner Miller, is he still on there?
Yeah, he's starting free safety on there, Mark.
Yeah, maybe it's just because, one theory, and Adam, this is a great question. I wish I had a better answer for you. Mm-hmm. But, one theory is that they might not know what they're doing quite yet with, Bernstein, because he has been a corner pretty much his entire career. And so I think, and I need to go back and look at the insight poll. It is the one game I have left on the DTR. Because I've been saving that for the four downs, special teams thing, because I cannot remember that at all. So I think maybe they might not know what he is. And in the insight poll, he came in and he played a little safety, a little sort of nickelback type thing. Could be that, or I could be definitely wrong, but I don't like the way it looks. I agree with you 100%. I don't like the way it looks. But, you know, I don't know all the factors that go into it.
Mark, but first off, between Thomas Nardo and Shane DeBona, we have the most porny sounding defense in the country. But the offensive line looks pretty set. I mean, really, offensively, there aren't a whole lot of question marks. I mean, it looks like we've got exactly two receivers with some experience. The offensive line is the five you expected, including, Geddes and McMillan at the guards. They're the only two guys who really have any experience. I know you and I both have a soft spot for Woody Orney, who makes his first appearance on the depth chart. But is there anything on the offensive side that really stuck out at you as even interesting or unusual?
Yeah, just the fact that Geddes and McMillan are listed as guards because they were both, the last time we saw them, they were hurt. And it's been a bad winter for McMillan. He's number eight on that list. So mm-hmm. He had the rhabdo, and he was supposed to have some shoulder surgery, but he's okay with that. So I'm not sure how available he is this spring, but I think the offensive line is fine. Even with those guys theoretically being two new starters, it's still fine. I mean, those guys have started, I think, between them, I think, from like 13 or so games. So they've started. They know what they're doing. And then they can pour bodies like salt on those two positions. They've got a ton of bodies there. I mean, you mentioned Woody Orne. They haven't even talked about Dan Heyer at all. He's the JUCO guy they brought in. Mm-hmm. I think he's a potential candidate. I think Connor Buffelia, I think, is ready to play somewhere. I don't think they're going to let him sit for two more years behind James Ferentz, who's locked down the center spot. So I think Connor Buffelli gets a long look somewhere. So I think they're fine there. On offense, I wonder about wide receiver a little bit because Keenan has not blown the doors off of anybody yet. I mean, he looks great, but, last year he was sitting behind the all-time career receptions leader.
The man who shall not be named.
and who we will not name.
Right.
And then Marvin McNutt, who I think, and this is just my opinion, and I think if his numbers that we talked about this a little bit last year, we talked about what would be his combine numbers, his vertical and his 40 and all that stuff. If those numbers are accurate and he puts up of about a 900-1,000 yard season with 10 plus touchdowns, I think he's a first round draft pick because he's over 6'3". I don't think he's quite 6'4". He might be even closer to 6'2"-ish, but he's got that sort of NFL body. So there was nowhere for Keenan Davis to go, and he's going to get a full dose this year. If he has to be ready, I mean, he's the only kickoff guy they've got listed for kickoff returns. He has to be ready, and he has to show me something. I think he has to probably show coaches, and I have to really kind of like knock down his spot in that rotation. But after him, then you get to the guys who you kind of sort of heard of, but haven't really done anything. I mean, last year Don Schumpert played on special teams and he had a really bad turf toe, so he really didn't get a chance to play any wide receiver. And then you have Kevontae Martin Manley, who DJK has been bragging up on his Twitter feed. So you get to guys who really you haven't seen. There's a little bit of worry there. I look at Abdul 30 catch tight ends, and I think Brad Herman is a completely underrated weapon. He's a lot faster than Reisner. I'm not sure about his hands. He's bigger than Reisner. He's a different athlete. And then Fedorowicz. I think the one thing, okay, we don't really still know anything about him, but on a few times last year when there was a helmet flying or something crazy, a body flying on the kick return team, usually he was dancing around. Usually it was him. so he's got a meaning to him that I think they can work with.
And the other question I had for you, Mark, out of the depth chart was, we talked about Shane DeBona, but he's listed as second string weak side behind two true sophomores to be, Christian Kirksey and Anthony Hitchens. Have you heard anything from the coaching staff as to whether, I mean, clearly they like Kirksey. He's listed twice on the depth chart, and you know both of them didn't redshirt in their first year. Is there any indication of what they see in these guys?
I think they like the way that Kirksey moves, and Ferentz talked a little bit about that in the press conference, and I eventually, and probably stupidly, I asked the question about, well, you know, you have a little bit of you're hurting for defensive alignment. Maybe you go to a 3-4 this year? And he laughed, and I think he humored me a little bit and said, well, we don't have the 6'3", 325-pound guy that you need to make that defense work. And they don't. I mean, Carl Davis could be there someday, but I think they actually want him to go in reverse and get down to more of a 280, 285 range so he can move a little better. So it'll be a 4-3, but it sounded like to me they wanted to get more out of better, more sturdy pass coverage out of the weak side linebacker, which, you know, if you watch Jeremiah Heiner toward the end of last year, Minnesota game, he used to play on one leg. I mean, he hurt his knee against Wisconsin. And he just was not getting there. He's just not getting out in the flat. And, you know, he was the best guy they had. I mean, there was nobody behind him that would have done any better. But they want a little more coverage out of that position, it sounds like. Norm loves to have the outside linebacker position locked down. And, you know, the guy coming back there, Tyler Nielsen, did suffer a broken neck last year. So I think that they're worried about a little bit about an insurance policy there. It sounds like Anthony Hitchens, who I think is an interesting prospect because he's pretty well built and he's put together. If he has, you know, a good football sense and the wheels that I don't know for sure he has, but I think he does. I think he's a guy who gives him some options and some flex in there and could be an important player next year.
What's the latest on Nielsen's neck, by the way?
Everything I know, he's fine. He's good to go. It wasn't a career ender. It was just the season ender. Just, you know, listen to me. He's fine, though. I mean, he, as far as I know, he's sitting out spring. He should be back in August. I think that's when the camp starts. So he'll be back in August. I think we're Facebook friends. I think I saw that he was hunting in Arkansas. So that's the only guy who's infirmed.
Okay, good. How big is Kirksey these days? Because he came in under 200 pounds.
Yeah, he still lifts under 200. So
is that like an updated number?
It's the one they list in the spring guide. So I don't know. I don't know where those are right now. I don't know. I wonder, you know, and this, you know, I hate to bring Rabdo back into it, but I wonder if that did not kink. I know they were not hard-headed, but, you know, They have to work out like this. They have to do this. But I wonder if there was some sort of breakage or some sort of, stoppage or just caution. Maybe that's the best word in the workouts this year. And if it might have kinked some of these guys' development, I wonder about that. I don't have any indication of that. I just wonder about it. Kirksey is a guy who needs to go in the weight room and game. He needs to be 215, 220 pounds. He needs to. We saw James Morris last year at 215 as a true freshman against Wisconsin, and it was hurting. I mean, he was getting goat herded around the field. You know, granted, Wisconsin's offensive line was tremendous last year. They ran the ball like 68% of the time. That's insane. But Kirksey, to be effective, I think, has to be 215. He's going to have to cover tight ends. all tight ends anymore are a minimum 250. You look at a guy like Fedorowicz, you know, a guy 195 is just going to get boxed out. So mm-hmm. he needs to have a certain weight. I do believe in that. I do believe guys have to be prepared unless they have, say, unless they can bench press a truck and weigh another 195 pounds, or unless they're, you know, got uncommon speed, they need to be a certain size to play a certain position, and he's still getting there as far as the spring depth chart tells us. Maybe he's 210 now, I don't know.
Yeah. James Morris is still listed as 215 on the website too. So I wouldn't be surprised if the numbers just haven't been updated.
I don't know if you're going to see, say, 235 pounds out of them this year, but, you know, if Kirksey gets up to 210, that's an improvement. If I think a reasonable expectation for Morris would be 225.
Mm-hmm.
I noticed in the press conference, Mark, that he was talking a little bit about Colin Sleeper, who is listed as one of the safeties potentially, and he's mentioned that Sleeper had played one of the Michigan players during practice for last year's Michigan game. Please tell me that was an offensive player.
Yeah, it was.
if he was playing a Michigan safety, that's not a good thing. We don't want that.
No, I don't know who he would have been last year. I always thought Nick Cucho played Denard Robinson last year.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Nick Cucho played Denard Robinson. I don't know who Sleeper would have been, but I have heard from inside that I don't want to hype him up too much, but there's some legitimacy to him being there. It's not just meet a guy, boom. I think the guy who we need a guy will be whoever runs for the most yards in the spring game. Could be DeAndre Johnson, could be Jason White. That guy will be, we need a guy. Here, you run the ball. But I think Sleeper has, so there is some legitimacy there. Whether he starts, you know, I don't know, because they have some more bodies to throw at it. I think you'll see, I don't have it in front of me, but there'll be a true freshman defensive back or two who sees the field. It might be a safety.
B.J. Lowry.
B.J. Lowry, I think he has a shot to latch on a corner.
Yeah.
Shot. Yeah.
So you don't think, when you're looking at the two deep right now, you think that there's more work that Iowa needs to do beefing that up?
Yeah, I think that there'll be, I want to say, somebody asked me on Twitter to put a percentage to how much a two deep changes between spring and when it's time to play the games in the fall. I'm going to say that two deep is like, I want to say 75% in. I mean, it's probably 75%, maybe 10% either way. So,
sure.
You'll see some faces. Bernstein is fine and that gets cleared up. He has a good shot at being a strong safety. If Micah Hyde moves to free safety, which is a possibility, then Tanner Miller is a strong safety, and then they have a little more flex at corner and say B.J. Lowry or Greg Castillo. So there's a lot could happen in that group. I think a lot could happen in the guard, at the guard position and the linebacker. And those are maybe the main three where there could be some changes. I think even the line, I think that's probably there obviously could be some change there. I think that right now, if I were going, you know, in the season, I had to say, what's Iowa's uh-oh spot? I think it's a defensive line. I think there's no objective way to say Roderick Benz, and I hate to say this because he's a really nice kid, but he had an awful year last year. I mean, he was passed in the depth chart basically by Mike Daniels, who deserved it, and knocked him out of off the field. He had no sacks. I think one tackle from us. Huge.
He had a touchdown.
He did have one touchdown. Tied the game for that 3 minutes. So he had a great sophomore year, bad last year. I think he has some proving to do. I think he will win a starting spot, but he has some proving to do as far as how effective he's going to be. LeBron Daniel, the other end, you know, he's a fifth-year senior. This is his one shot to do something. You know, ball's in his court. Mike Daniel, he's solid. He's locked in. The other tackle spot, you know, you're looking at Thomas Nardo, who right now is a walk-on, and did have rhabdo. And then you have Steve Bigek, who had the shoulder surgery in the spring, and is out this spring, won't play. So there's a lot of question marks up there. I mean, we're talking about bodies who you know, they might be depending on bodies who played mop-up time last year against Michigan State. So that's the real uh-oh spot, I think.
And typically, correct me if I'm wrong, but it's my recollection that when guys have shoulder surgery in this program, especially on the interior of the line, when they have it in the spring, the track record isn't really good for them being ready to go 100% once the season starts. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I'm trying to remember the last guy who had Julian Vanderbilt was a torn pec. I'm trying to think of an inside guy who you're saying.
And now I'm drawing a blank on the name. It was an offensive lineman. And someone who had a pretty bright future.
I think I know who you're talking about. Was it the kid from Des Moines who ended up being a strength coach for him?
Yeah.
He ruined his shoulder. He legitimately ruined his shoulder, and he was a defensive lineman. I went to West Wayne Valley. I can see his face. I can't say his name. That was just I think that was more of a freak thing. Joe Gaglione, he ruined his shoulder and missed all last year. He's on his way back this year. He was on a track where he might have been one of those. He would have been in discussion for playing time this year, but he ruined his shoulder. Basically, he missed all last year. I don't know where he's at in his development. So that's one guy who kind of legitimizes that. And the easy examples are the safeties, because it seems like every year they have safeties getting their shoulders worked on, and they all seem to bounce back. So. You know, that's one thing to track, especially with Big Ed, because who I think really was, he was unscheduled. This is going to be the year that he's, you know, started to knock on the door and really start to play. He's a fourth year junior. He's built his body up from 223 pounds his freshman year to 270 something. So this was his shot, and I think, you know, it'll be interesting to track that, because, they need bodies on defensive line.
I was reading part of the transcript here while you guys were talking here, Mark, and I love that they brought up, is it Cole Heisel?
Yeah.
And Ferrant said, I think the only position change is Cole Heisel, who you'll probably say, who the hell is Cole Heisel? But
he's a walk-on from
He's a walk-on. They seem to like him. Okay, well, we've gone through every other position. Let's get down to the big one. For the first time today, there was a very brief acknowledgement that there may be a position change for A.J. Derby.
Oh, yeah. It was more of getting him on the field. I mean, I think they're still in quarterback mode with him now. That's what he envisioned himself as. That's what he wants to be. And I think they're in that mode now. But, you know, Ferentz did say, hey, if it makes sense to use him on some special team situations, and I don't know if it's covering kicks or blocking for kicks. I'm not sure what special teams you'd throw a quarterback in on. I'm trying to figure that out. I don't know. I don't think they're going to have him block field goals. I don't know. Maybe a punt team. I don't know, but. He did say special teams, and you know what? Maybe that's the gateway. I don't want to say drug. That's a terrible analogy, but maybe that's the gateway to a position change. Maybe that's the way to break it to him gently. I don't know. Here's what I think is key with him is he okay? He showed at Iowa City High that he could make plays with his feet. I wonder where Terrell Pryor makes plays with his feet. Because he can run a 4.4 or low 4.5 40, I wonder where AJ Derby is there. I mean, if he's a 4.5-ish guy, maybe low 4.6-ish, maybe you want to use that at quarterback. Because look at Iowa and what Cal Keith has done. They've won with it. I mean, they've won and done things with all shapes and sizes of quarterback, and they would know, and they would probably put to use a guy who could run a 4.5 4.6 40. Like Derby. So I wonder where that is. I wonder how embedded it is in his heart that he plays his position. And, you know, coaches are, you know, I think that it was very interesting what Ferentz said today, because I think they're getting to the point now where they want to maximize his footballness, if you can use that word. They have a guy who's 6'4", 6'5",
yeah,
who weighs 235 pounds. They want to find a place for that. Want to mm-hmm. get that on the field. So I think you're right. I think that kind of, you know, the window's cracked, but it's not down.
Now, do you think the fact that Derby's not on the two deeps at quarterback is more an indication of the work that he has to do, or the fact that Winkie has done or has made some real progress?
That's a good question. I think that it sort of hush money, and that John, you're number two, sure, but who knows? From everything that I've seen of Winkie and Derby, which is not much, they've been even. They've been even or even-ish. So it'll be interesting. That was before last season. You know, didn't really see what, you know, saw a few practices and at the bowl, but nothing that would tell me, wow, Winkie's definitely beating out Derby. So I don't know where they stand. I think spring game, you know, backup quarterback is always interesting in the spring game because you actually get to see put some numbers, at least some, you know, scribbly numbers to what they do, and Winkie has not impressed me in those situations. He's not put up good numbers. He's not made a lot of plays. Derby last year, I think he threw an interception, and it's hard to read any of those hard, but I don't know. If you have a fourth-year junior, which is what Winkie is now, you want to kind of keep him in it. So he doesn't sure. leave, and you're not left in a lurch.
Is there? I mean, obviously, there's no real question on Vandenberg, and I'm assuming, Mark, I don't think it got asked today, but I'm assuming there's no question that Ruddock will redshirt.
I don't think there's any question Ruddock will redshirt. I think here's one scenario. If Vandenberg gets hurt and Ruddock comes into camp and blows their hair back, then there's a chance. But I think there's so much to learn at a quarterback that, Drew Tate, I think that's the only true freshman who's played, and he didn't really even play that much. I mean, it's a total mop-up. So I don't think you can expect him to play unless he blows their hair back, which I suppose there's a possibility of that.
Which of the, going back to the wide receivers, have you heard anything from people not named Koulianos about Kevontae Martin-Manley, or for that matter, Shumpert? Are either of these guys legit, do you think? Do they have the chance to push Keenan Davis for a starting spot?
I don't know if I would go that far with it, but I would say that one of them is going to has a chance to catch 30 passes next year, which to me is a significant amount. I mean, the third, I've written about this in the blog a couple times, the third wide receiver catches anywhere from 19 to 30 balls a year. That to me is a big step up from, you know, redshirting to that, which would be in Martin Manley's case, and then going from covering kicks to, you know, catching 30 balls. That's huge step up for Shumpert too. So one of those two, I think, almost has to come through to kind of take the heat off the tight end a little bit, because basically Fedorowicz is still, you know, he had some mayhem moments last year, but he's still an unproven guy. He's catching the ball and running with it. And it would take the heat off of Marvin. I mean, let's face it, Marvin is going to be a marked man in the Big Ten. You know, I said, and you know, well, you know, he catches 900 yards and 10 touchdowns. Well, I say that like it's programmed into a video game. It's not. And if this team, I think this team will be good at running the ball, and so Marvin will see a couple guys in his face probably most of the time until that complimentary guy develops. And I think that's a bigger part of the piece of the puzzle here than people might realize.
The one guy who I think is conspicuously absent from that, I know he's had some injury problems, but where's Jordan Cotton?
Yeah, he broke his leg in, or broke his ankle, I should say, in early December in the Insight practices. So that development's not there. I think he's still sort of in the building the body mode because he came in as Spinning Rail. I think he's in the 170s. And I did see once last year, you know, we walk in at Kinnick, I don't know, 2 or 3 hours before the game. And, I did run into him one morning. He was wearing a suit and walking in and signing. And that told me that he did not make the Cedar Rapids bus, which is the top 70 guys, top guys that they want to prepare to play in the game. Now last year he was just a redshirt freshman. So, you know, I don't know what the reasonable expectations were for him last year, but, you know, if we're bumping each other again walking into Kinnick this year, it's probably not a good thing.
So I don't want to, you know, try to suggest anything, but do you think a transfer is an option here if he doesn't make some strides?
I don't think it's quite to that yet. I say that not having ever talked to him. Well, not since recruiting anyway. But I don't think it's there yet. I think this year will be key. I think I think a reasonable expectation for him this year would be to make a return team, right now they're listing Marvin as the punt returner. I don't know if that sticks. I don't know if you want your Cadillac wide receiver returning punts. I don't know if you want that. I'm sure he wants to show the NFL he can do that. But I always thought Cotton would be a good, punt return guy, depending on his stability there. But, I think that's a reasonable expectation. If, you know, does he get a crack returning punts? Does he make the top 4 or 5, which would theoretically be in the rotation? You wouldn't see, you know, I'm thinking you'd probably see opportunities like, Paul Chaney saw last year.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to guess that he saw 10 to 15 chances of catch balls, I think, of which he caught. They hooked him up once. So he could kind of maybe carve that role out to him. That's a reasonable expectation. Could he transfer? I don't know. It's totally speculation. I'm sure, you know, with a brother at Iowa State, you know, and, you know, the grass is always greener, you know, it's something that I suppose, you know, might creep into his mind eventually, but I think he's probably okay right now.
Yeah, and for the record, I was completely speculating too, and I don't want to.
Yeah, I know.
I don't want to give anybody the impression otherwise. There is one thing I think that we all want to know, especially, you know, there's been some developments over the last couple months, a question that I think a lot of us want answered is. Which do you like better, go-go boots or the big to-do?
Right now, that's a tough question. Right now I like go-go boots a little better. It has a little more heart and a little more rock to it. And I think I'm trying to decide if the big to-do was sort of blow off from this album and they wanted to kind of grease the skids for this release. Or if it was some throwaway type stuff from, I guess it would have been, Brighter Than Creation Dark. So, I think that actually was all filled up with, that one release that came out that I play every day. It comes with my iPod every day. The cover version of, Petty's, Rebel. Have you guys, that is just awesome when those guys play that.
No.
Love it. It wasn't a full blown album. It was more of a, outtakes type thing. And I'm blanking on the name of it. It's got a cooling picture painting of the girl, a girl in the front, sort of a brownish cover. I'm blanking on the name of it though. And I just listened to the song today. But anyway, I want to say it's Antiquities or something like that. If you have a computer in front of you, it was before Big To Do. It was something they put out before that. But right now, I'm Go Go Boots. I love the two. I think the two I'm blanking on names in front of me. But But the two Patterson songs are the two of the one that end up being in sort of the outtake section where there's a video of him playing the guitar. I think those two songs are stellar. And I don't know why there's not a Mike Cooley solo album. I would run over broken glass. I would roll over broken glass in a jock strap to buy that. He's a guy who's just, to me, this is a huge, leap. But, Johnny Cash was a storytelling type of performer. I think Cooley is in that sort of realm. I mean, he's totally underappreciated, and maybe I'm overblowing it, but I really dig his song.
You know what I like, and I totally didn't see this coming, and I thought she was completely underwhelming on Brighter Than Creation's Dark, but Shauna Tucker over the last couple albums has really blossomed into a really good change of pace singer, and I like that over the last three albums, like her big songs sort of have this arc of being this, sort of naive girl who was who basically had a one night stand with someone who was already taken, and you see it over the course of the three songs. The first one's about her, sort of getting picked up by the guy. The second one is, oh, there's somebody else, and the third one is her just completely fucking crazy and wandering around town looking for the guy.
Mm-hmm. I love that song, the Houston one.
There's a Houston one too. Yeah,
they also let her close this album, Go-Go Boots, which I thought was very, very interesting because you can tell these guys are a little bit protective of the name, the brand name, and they. Mm-hmm. And I got the feeling, and this is probably unfair, but I got the feeling they kind of humored her. They let her bring it. It's during a couple of her songs on Brother and Creation's Dark, and then they were like, whoa, wait a minute, time out. I mean, this is for real. And they're letting her grow it, and then she closes this album. That's pretty great. One of the songs I cannot believe is not showing up in stadiums anywhere is Home Field Advantage. Why is that not blaring on the Kinnick Stadium? Oh, yes, that's good.
Are you kidding? It would get in the way of playing Ram Jam.
No, but wouldn't that be just a tremendous stadium type song? I mean, it rocks and it says home field advantage in it. So there you go.
I would like it, and I think the only thing that would stand in its way is the fact that it's a woman singing it, and I don't say that to be pejorative, but I mean, Joe Sports Fan, Johnny Sixpack is tied enough emotionally to familiarity with sports that he's just going to be like, what the hell is this girl doing? Give me Ram Jam. I came here for Ram Jam. I think that would be the only thing saying in its way. I'm not trying to legitimize that viewpoint. I think it's, the modern barbarism. But, that's just a fact of life.
One musical note today from Ference. He quoted a Bonnie Raitt song in the on the site. I have to go back and figure that what he said out. But, he showed me some stripes today. That's pretty impressive.
That's the most Ference artist ever.
You think so?
Bonnie Raitt just makes way too much sense. Like, yeah, that's...
I like it. Yeah.
It's, I'm perfectly fine with that, but that really does, when you think about it for a second, make way too much sense.
Well, at least it's not Hooting the Blowfish, right?
Dave Matthews Band. Yeah, I'll give you the Dave Matthews Band part. Wash yourself with the Hootie.
Oh, you know what? The Bon Iver, if you listen, he's got an Justin Vernon has an album, or Bon Iver, I should say. He has an album before Bon Iver, D'Armon Edison. I love this album. I absolutely love it. But you know what? If you listen to it a little bit and kind of unfocus your eyes, there's a little Hootie and the Blowfish in that.
Well, yeah, they're Carolina.
That's true.
It's everywhere down there. Well, I gotta go drink, so I'm going to let you guys go. Wanted to thank Mark for joining us once again, and I'll get you your ringtone.
All right, cool.
It will open the podcast, too, but I'll get you the ringtone version with just the
Well, Scott is sort of the engineer of the podcasting, and he worked in the other one. And
I saw that. That was well done. I can't believe you actually used it, but...
Scott picks all the music. Scott picks all the music for our podcast. I said, Scott, we got to use this one. He loves heavy metal. He has a broader musical talent than I do, but his fave, his go-to, is heavy metal, which totally freaks me out looking at the guy. But hey, more power to him.
All right. Well, thanks, Mark.
Hey, thank you guys. Appreciate it. Anytime.
Yep. Have a good night.